Hi guys, we're back. Smart Brand Marketing, another episode. This time we're doing an in-person episode on good equipment, which, yeah, we haven't done much before. Like last year we've done some on the Yeti. And it was a shit show.
Just people just like hovering over. It's like, you can see my spit. I can see your spit just hovering over a mic. I can see that.
Yeah. So today with me, we have my friend Davis. Every time I hang out with you, like, I get annoyed afterwards. Pretty much. Like, you figured out some of the systems that I kind of know I should be doing, but I maybe get too lazy. And it just, yeah, it when I hear about, like, how things are running at your company and I, you know, deal with my employees, I'm like, man, like, things need to change big time on the fulfillment end. Yeah. Maybe that's the one thing we could address first, like, how you figured out the systems part. Like, you know, where did you learn that? And how did you implement it?
Yeah, absolutely. So just for the context for anyone, I run you can call it a productized coaching service. So it started off back in 2017. It was just me. So Tom, you can relate to this, but when you're first starting out, it was a side hustle. I was working a full-time job and doing this on the side, making an online course. And a lot of people wanted coaching because no one else in the industry was just doing really great coaching. So I started doing it, but I was doing everything. I was doing the product. I was doing customer service. I was coaching. I was doing sales. I was doing operations. When PayPal said, hey, we need verification. Oh, I'm like, oh, okay, well, midnight, I'm here talking to PayPal. And for a while, I loved it. I still love the coaching, the sales, and everything else, the process. But realized that in order to make a bigger impact, for example, the moment it hit me that we actually had a business that needed to go was I was doing the fulfillment, the coaching. But at the same time, we had like this 3-week wait time where people could even get on my calendar. And I was like, okay, we need more systems in place for here, because there's people who want it and I have to turn them away. And then by the time it comes, because our industry is about job hiring, so it's like there's only a short window when someone has a job interview coming up. So that was the kick in the pants I needed to figure out, all right, if I want to scale and wanted to be able to maintain the quality of it, at first I was just hesitant. I was like, my thinking was that no one can ever do this better than I can at all roles. And I will tell you, 2 years later, I am completely wrong on that. There are people out there who could do everything better than me. But before building out the systems, I basically mapped out everything that I did. And I thought about what are some of the tasks that could be handed off to someone that doesn't have to be me. But if I had, let's say, a checklist or a way for them to have a FAQ or whatever it is, we call it a second brain. But to do it, we did that. So similar is that the first thing I realized is that there was a lot of customer service questions that before they became clients and they were just asking, that I could probably just post an FAQ, and then people who have other questions could just email our first hire, who was a virtual assistant in the Philippines. And she would just answer some of those questions. And the ones she didn't know, she would forward to me. But once I answered it, she knew them moving forward. So that freed up more of my time, a couple hours a week. And I was doing this as a side hustle, so I only had a couple hours to spend back on the sales, on the marketing, and the coaching. And then the second thing it came down to was the coaching. And I realized, there are probably amazing coaches out there who would love coaching. And I had to decide, did I want to grow our impact or did I want to be selfish and coach? And I found, all right, well, I need fulfillment partners. So it's just basically how I actually found my first fulfillment partner was actually a friend of mine. I was in LA at the time, and he flew down to San Francisco. This is a very religious guy. And he said, Davis, I'm getting a tattoo by one of the best artists in the world. I'm like, you're getting a tattoo. Like, you. Like, cross-country athlete, does everything your parents say, religious, never touch anything, and I'll call you. You want to get a tattoo? And he's like, yeah. So, like, and anyone who's been in a tattoo parlor, you're basically waiting for your friend for 4 hours while they're just laying down there. And I was, like, looking at my inbox. I'm like, oh, man. There's like a lot of potential clients I can get, but I need to find a great coach. So what I did online was I basically went through people's profiles online. And the first thing I did was I actually went to other services. And what I did was this, which was I looked at, I wouldn't say their competitors because they do something different, but I looked at how they were, who was, let's say, in our fulfillment team. And of course, like any sports team, you have your starters who people like feature. But what I would do is I would go to like the last page and figure out like the reviews. Like these people were like, oh my gosh, they're getting like 5-star reviews. But except because their placement's on the last page, they're not getting anything. So what I did was I basically just booked the call. Like I paid for like a coaching session. And I knew how much they were getting paid. And I guessed what the margin was. And I said, Hey, Tom, guess what? You don't have to coach me. I'm actually here. I saw you on the last page. You have great reviews. How do you like it? And usually they're super honest. They're like, yeah, but the flow sucks because I'm like on the last page. I'm like the bench player. I said, hey, if I pay you more and we build a system together, would you want to work some clients? She's like, absolutely. How much? I was like, how much are you getting paid now? And then I was just increasing. I'm like, she's like, what? I was like, all right, that's how I had my first coach. And I did that for a little bit, but basically taking the bench players that no one cared about. And then, but I knew that they were all-star potential. And then that's how I got my first coaches. And then through them, I would just watch how they worked with our clients, always quality checking and things like that. And from there, today we have like a 40-page, call it a curriculum system in place with videos, training. Like right. Anyone who gets on the team has to go through like this 20-hour process now. But that's how I found my first coaches, was basically getting the first bench players from other companies who just weren't getting treated well.
That's interesting. I think it depends on the niche too. Like if I think of mine, with like course marketing, for example, right? Most of the coaches around me that I've seen either don't want to do the work, right? So they're starting to get courses up, how to market your own course, which is like, you know, the easiest way out. And then I see some who are just not very good, you know? And then a few that I just wouldn't trust with my clients, right? So it's like, maybe the niche is just not big enough yet in that end, right? There's a lot of course creation partners I could definitely work with. A ton of companies that are probably really, really good, but just don't get the clients. And now you just gave me an idea, because I keep getting leads for that from my old business still every month, with people saying like, hey, I want a course created and then this and that, but we just don't do it anymore because I didn't enjoy it. That would be a easy partner to work with.
Could be one. And another thing I think about too with your current business too is, so there are obviously, if I don't trust, so my metric is always, would I myself as a client pay this much to have this person work on me?
Right.
And if the answer is like any reservations at all, I just pass on that person. There's like so many. But what I found is like just helping people out with other niches, just do conversations and dinner here in Chiang Mai, is that there's often people who are really good at the craft, but they just suck at getting the marketing right or right. getting the conversion. So what I find is that those are the people who just love the craft. They're like the bakers who can't open their shop, but they love baking. And I go after those. And you find that they exist. As in, you have to search hard because they're terrible at marketing. But once you find them, it opens up this whole another channel for you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did find them doing things around my niche, right? So like copywriting, creating autoresponders. They're probably better at Facebook ads. Maybe not the ads themselves, but the actual Facebook software, because they're in it much more than me. Yeah, I do find that. I just feel like there's always that resistance, right? And in creating these systems and letting things go too much. But even like, you know, since we spoke like 2 months ago, and I was really having trouble with the customer service fulfillment, and I just looked over all the emails and the questions I was getting, and I, you know, rolled out these Google Docs, answering them in detail, which took a long time. It did. And like this month, I think I saved like 20, 30 hours already just Amazing. By being like, yeah, just look at this Google Doc. They're like, can you explain this? And I'm like, yeah, just read that. Where before, you know, that was like either I got to make a video or I got to explain it again. So the systems definitely work. And I'm good at systems for marketing, but it's always the, you know, I'm resisting doing it on the fulfillment side, where I think it's much more important. And I bet you a lot of listeners are, you know, dealing with that too. Like I've had one guy who, he has a fence company, and I'm not sure why he listens to my show, but he does. And, you know, shout outs to you. And it was the same thing, right? You know, he's trying to get sales, then he gets overbooked, and then, you know, he's just out there, you know, he can't get people to help him. You know, so he's out there himself, he can't trust his employees. Now, I think it's all systems too.
Yeah, it's definitely systems. So like for the first almost 200 clients that we had, I coached and did the fulfillment for all of them. And you kind of learn the systems in place about what people's pain points are, and you can almost build like a curriculum, which we did. But like for fencing, it's kind of like, you need to do these things. But like for every coach, now we have a head coach, so there's someone else who does it. But before, it was just me. I would go into the fields. Like if I was doing fencing, for example, I would literally go in the field and watch that person. Does that mean that I'm technically burning money and time? Yes, but it's kind of like if I can teach this person how to do it right, now I just opened up my capacity even more.
Yeah, and that's the thing I try to instill in the people doing course marketing, like even the ones that can't afford me, which is fine, you know, to create systems. You know, I find a lot of them just throwing stuff at the wall and doing things that don't scale. They'll never scale, because, you know, marketing and sales is where I'm, you know, I can definitely get this stuff going, And I'm so strategic about it. I'm like, why are you posting on Facebook 15 times a day? You know, I'll do one post at the right place with the right insights and get 14 leads. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just watch it. I'm like, you need a better system. And even that's not the best system. You know, like lately what I found is having, you know, just really good content, distributing it a bit on social, and then waiting until SEO kicks in. So, you know, using both of them, but the initial part maybe will be paid. You know, and I think we talked at lunch about this too. You know, initially you got to pay a little bit to get the short-term effects, and then when SEO kicks in, you stop paying, and then you reap that. But it's like you got to have these systems in place that work constantly, you know, without you having to post. Because how much can you post per day, right? Like how much can you scale social media when you really think about it?
Exactly. It's like finding your one, I always think about it as finding your one channel that works. It's like we talk about 80-20 all the time, but what's like that one effective channel? Like even when we started, I was trying to figure out, well, what, back then I was doing things that didn't scale. I was going on forums, answering questions, and people were interested in me. It's similar to what you were doing when you were starting. It's like going to these workshops, and then people are coming up to you afterwards, ask questions. That's pretty much what I did. And as we grew, it's the same philosophy there is, I try to have people just stick to what they know and what they're comfortable with. Like, for example, I will tell you, like, systematically, operationally, I'm great. But, like, for creative things like YouTube, I'm terrible. But I'll tell you something that we ran this month, which is that I hired an editor who's a freelancer, and he just makes incredible ads, and I trust him on that one. But we still, it's like, for me, I was sweating working with him. I was like, I don't have any creative bones here. And then you're telling me, okay, he's like, yeah, I have to reframe this for YouTube. And then Facebook has a different dimension, so we got to go pay for that too. I'm like, oh geez, this bill is kicking in. And then I have to go test these channels. So it's like, all right, so now we got to go test Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and all these other forums for video. And then mathematically, not all of them are going to work. Like
right.
The results when I was looking at it, for example, some of them we broke even, some of them we lost money, and some of them, or at least one of them, we just like, wow, the leads are coming. I actually I'm running into a fulfillment issue, not fulfillment on the coaching, but fulfillment on our sales team. So I have to actually like pause, like slow down the spend, but like we know it worked. But it's kind of like, it is, in a way, finding things that don't scale, but once you figure it out, double down on that versus, like, if you're posting 15 times on Facebook and you're not getting a lead, why is the 16th time going to work? But if you're posting, like, one time on, let's say, Twitter and it works, oh, I think you need to spend more time on Twitter.
Yeah, that's the big issue with social, trying to find. But even, like, you know, when I say I'm strategic about it, like, that stuff doesn't scale, right? So I'm strategic, I'll get my 14 leads, but it's not what I would build my business on, right. You know? So you still need... you know, something like you said, where you can hopefully keep doubling down until it just stops working so well, or you run into issues, right, where you gotta create better systems.
Right, or you find a thing that works. Like I'll tell you one thing, for example, for LinkedIn, I also did the whole posting, my team and I did that. And what we found, for example, for at least in our niche, is it's not about the how many times you posted per day. It was actually came down to this. There was like one type of post that we got like 80 responses from. It was basically, we said that a company in our niche was hiring, and people said, and I just said, hey, if you're interested, put I'm interested on the comments and I'll send you more details. And then it was like, next day, my support team had to go through and message it. And of course, because they respond back, that person sees it, increases the virality of it. And we came to realize that, oh, wait, so we don't have to post like 100 different things. I see like people on LinkedIn posting like hundreds of things, and maybe you get some good leads. But I found that just, or at least in ours, it's just one type of content. And now, so one of the tasks that I have one of my team members doing is, hey, let's figure out a job board that automatically, like we can just know which companies are hiring, and then that's the only thing we post on LinkedIn.
Oh, that's awesome. Just repurposing it.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, theoretically, you can just go into all these job boards. There's like 100 and something companies that you can go in a job board, but no one wants to do that. So we're just going to do it, post on LinkedIn and see what we can do. But yeah, it's like figuring out what's that one thing that works or that one channel that works and just scaling it from there. But once you have the system in place, everything just works like clockwork.
Yeah, I think the problem is just trying to figure that out. You know, like, I think a lot of people are hoping that the next thing is just going to be it. And sometimes it'll take 200.
Oh, absolutely.
Or even more. You know, I think with our culture now of everyone, you know, trying to be overnight superstars and going viral, you know, people underestimate just how many years sometimes it takes for like a Gary Vee to make it. Because I remember him just, you know, since we mentioned him, maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, creating shitty videos. Like, you could see it. It was in his kitchen or, you know, somewhere else, and just screaming at people like, oh, I'll hustle you. Remember that stuff?
I remember those. But even back then, even his first wine videos when he was giving the tutorials, like low quality and everything. Like, he's going to be embarrassed about that. He talks about that too. But obviously, it's like, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean, if you really think about that, it's like, you know, that's as raw as you can get. He was throwing everything at the wall. You know, just hustling. He was making videos that didn't even make sense. Like, I remember this one, because I just followed him because I thought he was amusing in the beginning. He was getting on an airplane, right? He was, I think he was still in economy. He's just yelling at people. He's like, look, it's 5 a.m. I have nothing else to say, but I'm going to out hustle you. I'm going to make a video right now before we take off. And this is what you should be doing in your business. And, you know, I do think, you know, hustling is a bit overrated, but in the beginning, like, you will need to, you know, put out a lot of stuff to make it work. Like, there's one client I had, I think it really took over 200 lead magnets before they figured it out. Around 200. It was a lot of, you know, throwing stuff against the wall. And the lead magnet they came up with, it was actually one of the dumb things, like, you know, copying this, but it was just like their morning routine, and it was just very little to do with their business, but everyone wanted it. And they're just like, are you serious? We were being so creative and giving so much value in all these lead magnets, and this is all people want to know.
But see, that's the thing, right? You find your one. I think part of it is hustling, but what you mentioned earlier, Tom, is like, you have to be smart about it. As in, hustling for hustling's sake, that's just a waste of time. But when you're finally trying to figure out what that end goal looks like, I always think about, what is my end goal? What does that look like? For example, and we talk about this a lot, but it's like the marketing process. It's like one channel that works magically for someone, they're going to go like, oh my gosh, this is like the answer to everything. Right. You try it, and like, crap, I can't even get a fraction of what you're getting. But then you tell them about your channel and they're like, I can't even make that work. And so it's like, for everyone, it is different. So I think one of the mistakes I always see is that I go to these conferences and people are always tuning about like the next magical bullet. It's like, oh, like 2 years ago, it was like mini chat on Messenger bot. Last year, what was it? Last year was like so many different things, YouTube videos. I think these things can work, but like, the worst is that you're trying to learn something and you just switch it right away. I think it takes a little bit of time to figure it out. But if you're just hustling out at the wrong things, or you just didn't even hustle at all and you're just chasing the next shiny object, then of course you're going to go completely bust. As in, some of the things that we do, people are like, that's crazy. How does that work? I go there all the time. And I'm like, well, my market's different from your market.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Being where your market is. You know, that's the number one thing. Like when I mentioned this strategic post, it's because I'm going where the market is. And, you know, someone's like, where can I see your stuff? I'm like, unless you're the target market and you see my stuff, like, I'm doing something wrong. Like, why in the world would you be able to see it if you're not the exact client that I want? You know, so I think that's a part of it too. You know, just like getting through the noise, right? Like, you got to be where your customers are at. You know, like, you're not Coca-Cola to start branding to the whole world.
Exactly. I'll share a funny story to hopefully illustrate this point too. So a number of years ago, before I had my current company, I was working at a company called Jump Cut. We do Facebook, YouTube ads to power our online courses. And so I was at a conference for marketing conference. And so it's spread out across the city. And one of the talks was about leveraging YouTube organic videos, posting it. And it's about, what was it, like maybe 100 people in that room. And back then, Facebook didn't have the restriction it does now, where you can do like geo, you can literally go down to the pin as far down. I'm like, interesting. So the speaker just talked about the power of YouTube. These people are all not trying to wonder. And we have a course on how to make viral YouTube videos. Up, Davis, you know what you're doing. All right, next break. I literally pushed myself. I was like, hey, trying to leverage YouTube for ad. And the radius is literally all the hotels within it. And I'll tell you, we've never had cheaper leads in the United States ever.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
So talk about being where your audience is, as in right there. And then when VidCon was going on in LA of the YouTubers, well, you know where I was targeting.
Yeah. I mean, that's being in the target market, right? But as you mentioned too, you know, like these hot trends that come through, and I started thinking about them. Yeah, I remember ManyChat, being on Facebook Messenger, so big. YouTube, so big. Blockchain, so big. Like if you know, just copied all that stuff, it'd be like, yeah, I'm doing all my marketing on Facebook Messenger now, and then doing stuff on YouTube, and my marketing is powered by a blockchain. But I actually haven't used any of those, and I've been doing just fine.
Yeah, same here. As in, obviously, eventually we'll explore it. But it's kind of like the rule is, my team has always reminded me of this too. It's like, I think one of the problems is that when you grow, you think you can do even more. But my team always every month reminds me, hey, Dave, sorry, let's remember your rule is that we want to focus on things. You're like, you're right. So it's like, with more manpower, you would think you just toss more things at it. But for us, it's like, for example, I think Instagram could be good for us. Pinterest, I want to try that, little things like that. But for a fact, right now, we know that there are other channels that we want to continue to optimize, and we want to continue to do that and double down on it. I think chasing after the next shiny object just makes it more confusing. And then it's kind of like the metaphor I like to use is, it's like, do you want to be a Chinese buffet or do you want to be a sushi restaurant where everyone just comes to you because you're known for the one thing that you do really well?
Yeah, you want to be Jiro's sushi restaurant.
Oh, man, I just want a reservation there. Let me know if you can hook me up there.
That's one place we should definitely hit up.
Wait, we do a podcast there from there, too. We get Gary Vee there, and he do his own video.
Jiro would kick us out, man. Like, this man, I heard, he sets you down, like, by himself. You can't even sit where you want to. Everything is, like, you know, done within 30 minutes. You have to eat things the way he does, or he kicks you out. Like, we started doing a podcast in there, it would be just over. It would be game over. Jiro would be like, get out.
Get out. No sushi for you. No refund.
No refunds for you. So how is... how is your strategy now? Because I feel like, you know, you need one good organic channel, you need one good paid channel, and then, you know, SEO, if you're doing content, will take over at some point, or YouTube, it depends, because that's a big search engine too. But what's the strategy for that, to like kind of narrow in on those? Because I know last time we spoke, you talked about Quora a little bit, you were testing other stuff, and what have you kind of found?
Yeah, absolutely. So it doesn't remind any reader, because they're like perking up. It's like, oh, Quora does ads. That's like good. So take a step back and realize that what Tom mentioned is that you want to be where your audience is. And for us, so when we're in the job interviewing market, resumes, cover letters and things like that, in mock interviews, and a lot of people post questions on Quora, except sometimes the answer isn't the best answer. So that's why we're there, because we know our audience is there. We know we can spend more time there versus like no one's going on, let's say, Facebook or Instagram to talk about, or Twitter right now to talk about, hey, anyone want to help me with my resume? So a little less, right? But they will do it on like a place like a Quora. So that's how we ended up there. But for now, our current strategy is, ideally one day organic just takes over everything, right? Because like, you don't need it. I don't want to be a Coca-Cola. I don't need that big of a branding. But I always think about, for paid, I try to diversify in terms of it. But in the early days, I always think about going from 0 to 1 and then 1 to N. So 0 to 1, you're just trying to find your first channel. So instead of trying to do a little bit of YouTube, a little bit of SEO, a little bit of paid trade, I would just pick one and be really good at it. So I was talking to a friend of mine today. So within the last year, he's grown his business from 0 to 100, about 300K in profits. And they did it completely with YouTube videos. But in the beginning, they tried a little bit of everything and they realized they're both just very natural on camera. So they decided, well, YouTube is it, and they double down on it. And nowadays, they're like, okay, now they're at the point where if YouTube changed the algorithm or something and just shut them down, they're out. So now they're looking for new resources. I was talking to them about paid ads and other things like that.
Yeah.
But it's the same way with everything else. You need to diversify. For us, we were doing paid ads to begin with, but now we move more into organic because you wanted that diversification you were mentioning. So our SEO, we're doing that. We're doing live events, which I still love. But it's like things that, in case one channel goes down, the others don't. Like, for example, I'll tell you, like, one of the forums we used to hit up, for some reason, their traffic just went down. And as a result, it took part of us out of it. But luckily, if that was my only channel, I'd have been screwed. Yeah. But of course, we have like multiple channels that we can rely on.
Yeah, that's always the danger, right? Especially with the platforms. You know, like, I've seen a lot of people come to me, for example, Instagram. I had a client, got huge on Instagram, 400,000 followers, and then they, you know, cut the reach by 80%, almost. So her business just went, you know, completely down. And we found a paid way on Facebook now, which, you know, kind of takes it back. But then I found someone else on Facebook who, you know, could make a profit at $1 CPC, and now it went up to 3.
Wow, okay.
And, you know, it's the same thing. You know, AdWords goes up and down depending, you know, like when people run to Facebook, AdWords goes down for a lot of stuff. When they come back, you know, it's like back and forth. YouTube was insane for a while, 15 cents a click or less. Then you had, you know, was it Billie Jean, I think, you know, with the YouTube guy screaming about YouTube for like 2 years. And then, you know, those went up a lot too. So there's always that danger, you know, with these. I remember even the Messenger thing. I never really got into it, but I remember Facebook banned ManyChat for a while.
Yeah, they're banning all third party for a little bit. I remember that, as in we were battle to test it at the time at my previous company. And then we're like, well, guys, time to move on to something else. But yeah, it's like, I think in the beginning, when you're going from zero to one, it's just you. You just need to find something that works. But once you start something that works, scale it up, obviously. But then you need to really think about diversification there, because it's like, if all of a sudden, like anything else in life, is if it goes away, like think about some of the athletes here who rely only on their skills. As in, if they have a good financial advisor, they're like, all right, you know what? You're only going to be able to work for a little bit, barring like an injury or ACL or whatever tear, then you probably need to invest some of this money somewhere else. And it's the same thing with our business, that people don't think about that. And they're just like, no, I have this one thing, it's going to work forever. But being in this business, even my business, we're on our third year. I will tell you, the first channel we found worked to a certain point, and then for some reason, same thing, right? Our cost per clicking things go up, and I have to go find a second channel, which the same thing happened. So it's like, but now we're starting to get more referrals and so forth for people who know our service organically and so forth, and that's been kicking in. But my advice is just, you need to diversify, but only after you found that first channel that works.
Yeah, you know, the second question usually is, you know, we do hear this advice that we should grow all the time. And for some businesses, I think that's okay. But I think for especially agencies, for a lot of them, the bigger they get, you know, often the more problems there are and more moving pieces. And, you know, the profits go down, you know, for the owner a lot, you know. So I'm not sure if, you know, every business should grow that much too, should find all these extra channels. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe switching the business model, you know, and it's something I've been thinking in mind too. Like, I like what I'm doing, but I don't want to scale it so big. You know, like I do like to do other things too. So I'm, you know, testing, you know, productized services, and there's so many things I could do, which we're starting to diversify even more. But I'm just like the core business, you know, I'm not sure if I want to scale it.
Yeah, I think that's a fundamental question, is that I don't think everyone should scale. As in, I will tell you, you're right, completely right. When you scale, the profits for the owner, especially in, as I'm scaling now with full team, the profits definitely go down for the owner, as in, because you're like, you're sharing it with so many people, you have a team. And also second, the number of moving parts does go. So it's like my time, even though I'm not doing, let's say, support calls, sales calls, or the coaching itself, I have like other issues too. And as we grow, it's kind of like things like, hey, this paperwork needed. And our TransferWise is like, hey, can you validate this contract? And I'm like, wow, these are problems I did not have to do 2 years ago. And it's just a question of, do you need to grow? Because if you're just growing for growing's sake, then there are probably better ways. But if you're trying to build a business that's sustainable and just that is advantageous to your lifestyle, just really think about, do you actually want to scale? Because the answer for a lot of people, I don't think, is to scale. As in, you just want where you are. As in, if you, since you sponsored the DC, you know, that Growth Ninja, you sponsored them as well. And Vincent's probably one of my favorite entrepreneurs. But he went through that same phase too. And he gave a fantastic talk at DCBKK this year. Or last year, I should say. But he did the same thing. He was one man, had too many clients, and then grew up a team. He realized he just really loved doing Facebook ads, and he's like one of the best in the world. And he decided, you know what, I'm going to build this agency, and then got rid of it because he just took the best clients and just worked with it. But for him, it's like it wasn't worth the extra stress or the pain. And at some point, you just want to enjoy the life that you have. And I will tell you, like, as someone who's scaling a business, it is, it's harder than you think. Not the scaling part, as in I can turn more ads on and more SEO, but it's literally like maintaining the quality and keeping a check on the team.
Yeah, I think what ruined it for me is that book, The Company of One. Mm. You know, once I read that and I started really thinking about it, I don't mind scaling things that I don't have to fulfill, but anything I got to, you know, like you said, you know, check the quality and make sure that's up. I don't know if I want to scale that, because then I become a babysitter and I become this guy that needs to go over everything and be like, why isn't this done properly? And that's even less fun than fulfilling it in the first place, you know, because at least if you do it, you get it done right and you leave it. Now you're picking up pieces after other people. And it's like, this is definitely not what I signed up for.
You're not the first one to reference the book. Yeah, it's book, definitely read for anyone who's thinking about scaling before they do it. But yeah, I remember I was in an entrepreneur group, and one, probably the guy who was like the most successful in it, like he can easily scale, but he said his favorite book that he read last year was Company of One. And he just said, thing. It convinced him. It's like, yeah, why do I want to grow? As in, my lifestyle is great. As in, I don't even know what to do with the excess amount here. He has more than for his family to live off, and they get to do everything they want, and he's not into anything more.
Yeah, because at the end, you know, it's like, how much do you really need? And what I found is, you know, by just creating the systems that I've done last month, which helped a lot with the customer service, you know, I saved maybe 20, 30 hours this month, which
It's amazing.
Yeah. But I think if I set up a few more systems on the fulfillment end, even if I do have to do some of it, I could take on, you know, 3-4 clients, the right clients, right? So now I'm being super picky with the clients that I choose too. And I could actually work very little, you know, and still have the same quality and same support that I did before just by having things in place. And yeah, I'll still diversify, but then like, I don't think I want to grow this business, you know, and that's a kind of good feeling too, because it's like, okay, I'll enjoy what I'm doing and I'll still make the same profits, don't have any more babysitting or management, you know? So I think partnerships alleviate a lot of this too, you know, the right partnerships. Like, you know, like one of our mutual friends does WordPress speed fixes, right? And I was like, and we've done this for a while at my company, but I'm like, it's such a pain in the ass. I would rather just have him do it and I'll just take a cut from, you know, a commission from it.
Exactly. Less for you. You know, the quality is going to be good and so forth. I think what really changed for me is that I think in my first year when this was just a side business, it was kind of like, how much profit can I make out of the business? And then second year is like, oh, how much profit is more? But the more that I'm into the business, the more I realize that the real measure, if you really think about it, is what's your profit per hour spent on a business?
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking too. And James Shramko put out a book not too long ago, and that was one of the parts in there, like, you know, figure out your hourly. And I did. And I will walk out of a movie now or go straight to sleep because I'm like, you know what, this is worth more than watching the movie. So like, you know, the girlfriend will take me to like these crappy horror movies because she likes them. And I'm like, look, don't wake me up. I'm going straight to sleep. We got the first class at the movie so I can lay out on the couch and just don't bother me. This is worth more, you know, than the So like, I look at everything like that now. And I'm saying no to like, you know, almost everything just because I'm like, my time is more valuable than that, which is kind of a weird thing, right, when you think of it. But yeah, like the most valuable things that you can do is, you know, not just money-wise, but like going to the gym, right? Like that's worth so much because it's a long-term effect. But some of these lower tasks, like, you know, should you be bookkeeping? Are you, you know, watching Netflix? Like, what's the point of this?
Exactly.
Did you read that book, by the way?
I have not yet, but yeah. I'm going to pick it up. As you know, I love buying the books that you recommend there. I'm looking at the shelf here, and I'm like, oh, I think I read some of these, and then Tom actually recommended these to me.
So what's the plan for this year, you think, with the business? Is it more growth? Is it stabilizing it?
So we have a lot of room to grow, and I think we can be much bigger than we are right now. But before I do that, I almost think of it as right now we're investing back into the product and into the systems and making sure, again, it's like we can grow, but it's kind of like you're going really fast and you're hoping you don't crash. But for me, it's kind of like, well, let's figure out the guardrail. We don't have to get there any sooner. We're leaving money on the table, but again, I'm pretty happy where we are in terms of it if the profits stay the same. But really what I want is, how do I make this company not about me and about the team and the leadership team, elevate them up and keep the quality the same? So right now, this year, the goal is how do we invest back into quality so that if I took a trip away for 2-3 weeks, I don't have to check my single email and I know the business is doing better than when I left it. So that's the goal. And then if we decide to scale, we can. But just right now, it's just figuring out the pieces, because unlike other companies where things are like all completely online courses, we have online courses, but for us, coaching is part of what people know us for, and it's like quality controlling for that one and making sure that we continue to grow, scale reasonably. But at the same time, every single person that comes on, no matter if you're a coach with someone who's been with us since day one or you're coach with someone who joined last week, you feel good and I feel good about the coach that you're about to get paired off with.
You know, this just reminds me of a book I finished recently. It's about the last CEO of Disney that's still around. I think it's The Journey of a Lifetime.
Ah, yeah. I love that book, actually. Yeah. Bob Iger's book. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like, you know, quality control. You know, like really thinking through, you know, do we grow? Do we, you know, take a hit short term to really grow in the long term? And I think this guy was a genius. You know, like some of the stuff he did with acquiring... you know, Star Wars, that whole thing.
Star Wars, Pixar, like Bob Iger did some amazing things.
Yeah, but the way he kept the companies still have their own feel and still, you know. So I think, you know, he really doubled down. Like he's seen that over the 10 years before, you know, he became a CEO, like they destroyed their animation department, which happens in a lot of businesses when you're just growing and hoping you're not going to crash.
Exactly. And of course, good thing that, well, putting the process in place, making sure, and then eventually, of course, Disney is like amazing right now. But it's the same way, as in I can't compare myself to Disney because Bob Iger is on a very many tiers above me in terms of his genius there. But just exactly it is that how do we make sure that the quality is there? Because if you scale, it becomes a nightmare. And what I don't want is that one day I have so many moving pieces, so many emails that I don't even know all the parts of my business in terms of like, is it doing well? Is it not doing well? So I'd rather just grow step by step versus just give me everything at once and we'll figure it out.
Well, it's not even about comparing yourself to Disney, but it's, you know, the one part where I read about their strategic planning, right? So they had that team that it took...
Oh, yeah, the internal strategy team.
Yeah, that team, it took 70 or so people to come up to a decision about anything that they're going to do in Disney. And with things changing so fast... And I realized this in my business when I had 17 employees at one time. It wasn't even that many, but we couldn't move that fast because everyone was so used to this system that we had. And they're like, oh, boss, just put it through the system, you know, and like, we'll get to it. I'm like, no. Like, some of these things need to be done immediately or we might be out of business in a couple of weeks, like, because things change so quick. And, you know, when he started destroying that thing, and when I started thinking about it, I was like, you know, that's such a danger, right? When you start putting these key people into place and you upload all the stuff to them, but then they create this, you know, because employees think differently usually than a business owner, right?
Absolutely. And then, obviously they balance out too sometimes with you. And it's just, but it is a balancing act too, is that, as again, similar referring back to company one here, is that as you grow, things go slower. As in, I will tell you, we were the fastest when it was just me, obviously. That's you imagine it. Like, yeah, I knew everything. Year two, it was like VA, Davis, and contractors, still moving a little bit, but now that we have team members, things have to go through, and then one thing I do affects somebody else, and then, of course, the team has to remind me. So now we have regular stand-ups, and it's like things I would have never imagined 2 years ago that I was like, oh, can't we just start this today, like right now?
Yeah, that's the problem with the employees, right? Like, even with this podcast, like, you know, there's been a couple false starts this month. I had, you know, some people come on, which I said, you cannot be on this podcast. I don't know how you got through. Dude, one of them was a business coach, which, you know, I detest business coaches, but he was a business coach for other business coaches. I was like, you're like the top tier of evil. You know, like, you're going to tell everyone to raise their prices and some other nonsense, right? But anyways, you know, so like this podcast is supposed to come out tomorrow, which I don't know if it will, because I told my employees today, you know, we got to put it out. And I'm getting all these concerns now, like, you know, boss, like, we should have a 3-4 day. I was like, it's just you guys. There's no one else here to, you know, like, what are you doing? Just get it out. But that's having just, you know, one tier underneath you. If you have a couple, you know, oh yeah, it's got to go through the executive and then he's got to get that. So that was a talk I had with James Schramko before. I'll, you know, mention him again. And he was thinking about growing his company and he realized if he has over 100 employees, he'll have to put that whole, you know, CEO kind of executive type of system in place. And then he just destroyed the service business. He's like, I'm done. He didn't want it. You know, so he minimized, he only got, I don't know, maybe like a handful of employees now, and he's making way more money and has way more free time than he did before. But it was that scaling part, right? He realized like that number of 100 is when things were really have to change. And he just didn't want to do it. And then when I think about Disney, when you go so high, you come in as a CEO and you got 70 people just making a decision. Like, these people do nothing else, but they sit there making a decision. So if you got to move... And I think they had to do that with the Disney Plus, you know, the channel. Like, it would have took them 4 years just to figure out what to do. So scary.
Exactly. It's like the, it's definitely every, it's like the conundrum we always talk about. Like, every corporation wants to be a startup so they move fast, but every startup wants to get those systems in place and want to be a corporation. Like, so it's like, it's you want the best of both, but it takes definitely trials and errors. Like you talked about, it's like people just want to be an overnight success, but a lot of times it takes a lot of failures. Like, people look at the current business I have, but I don't realize that I've been doing this since I was in college. And so if you think about the last, well, almost 9 years now since I started in college, and I had so many failures along the way that taught me to where I am today, but you just have to go through those trials and errors sometimes. But again, something that you do really well, Tom, is that you read a lot of books. So it kind of shortcuts you. I always think about books from other entrepreneurs as like a cheat code when you're, I love playing cheat codes when I was a kid playing video games. It's like, screw it. Why am I taking this the hard way? Just give me a guidebook. Let me just tell you where I need to go.
No, it's true. Yeah, like the first thing, if I was I was in a shooting game, it'd be unlimited lives. You give me that, I'm good. And that's kind of what we have in business, right? Like, until, you know, we can keep building new things and trying them out. And I think, you know, when I think about my successes, is, you know, because they were built on so many failures. But, you know, those, I fail quickly. That's my thing. And then I move on. No one even really notices it. They're like, oh, yeah, didn't you try that thing like a week ago? Like, yeah, it's done.
Exactly.
But a couple of years from now, no one remembers it.
Oh, totally. Exactly. And then I look back at it. Sometimes I'm like, I'm so glad I went through that phase. It was a failure. Glad no one knows about that.
All right, Davis. I think we've been going for 40 minutes. So let's wrap it up. Where can people find you?
They can just reach out to me on my blog, daviswin.com or myconsultingoffer.org. I'll send you the notes and your keynotes too on the keynotes, or just find me on LinkedIn. I mean, probably one of the easiest people to find. Or if you're just in the city, you literally can just hit me up on Facebook. And
yeah, the question is, which city? Like, that's the people have the problem they have there with me. Like, which city are you in at this time?
I don't know, but if you check my blog, probably will tell the answer.
Do you actually update that stuff on your blog?
Sometimes. And then I have so much fun. And then I'm like, for example, I'll tell you a batchy story. I know we're hitting there. But I was in Los Angeles for a little bit, forgot to update it. And I happened to be back in Chiang Mai. And then somebody flew over, not just for me, but he's like trying to contact me. He's like, Davis, I'm so excited for them. I was like, great, here are the options. And I was like, I didn't find any of those on Google Maps. What are you talking about? There's like only so many of these places. He's like, are you in Los Angeles? Like, oh, I'm in Chiang Mai right now. So we have to go catch it next time. But I try to update.
Yeah, I get this on LinkedIn because I'm bad at updating all the social thing, right? So like, I think LinkedIn still has my Queens, you know? And I have like people from Queens reaching out and trying to like, they said, oh, when I type in marketer from Queens, like you're the first one that pops up all the time. And they all want me to join these like meetings and membership groups, and they keep messaging me. And I'm like, guys, it's going to be a while since I'm back. But I just don't feel like updating it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a part of me. It feels like home, too. But most of the year, I'm in San Francisco. So it's not 50-50. You'll catch me in San Francisco.
All right, guys. It's been a great episode. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Tom.